All right, this is Lady C. You're going to learn some life lessons over here with me and these sisters doing our little chit-chat this morning. And so I want to welcome to the platform Miss Ivy and Lucille. Welcome, ladies.
Hey, what's going on?
Y'all know what's going on. Y'all know what's up. What's going on? Let's get this party started. Who wants to start talking about the situation with the new changes out here in the Jehovah's Witness world?
You know, when I first saw it, I thought it was very disingenuous, you know, in terms of how they presented it. The way they presented it was as if they were clarifying. You know what I mean? And in fact, that's the term that he used. He said, we have no problem with this, but evidently there's some concerns, you know, in the congregations about whether or not beards are allowed. So let us provide a clarifying statement. That wasn't a clarifying statement. You made an actual change, but you try to present it as if the brothers and the sisters in the congregation were the ones that had the issue. You know, they were the ones that had the misunderstanding. They didn't understand about whether or not this was an allowable thing. And when the reality is that you made a formal change. And it wasn't until the end of the presentation that he actually said, referenced the fact that this was a policy change. But I just thought the whole thing, the way they presented it, was disingenuous. You notice now they can't hide the history. So before, they hid the history, but now that they can't hide the history, they incorporated the history into the video, showing the brothers, you know, in earlier time periods who actually wore beards, you know, showing a picture of Russell with a full beard and how he was considered well-groomed and all of this stuff. So the way they just presented it to me, like I said, was very disingenuous. You know, they have this really good ability at deductive reasoning. They start off at this, you know, let's talk about appearance. And then they ask you either a whole bunch of questions like, well, if A is A, then can B be B? You know, they bring you down this little silo to get you to the conclusion that they want you to have. And if you're not paying attention, and not asking your stepping back to ask yourself critical thinking type of questions, you can be drawn and sucked down into that straw of believing what it is that they say. But you like know, to,
huh? Lucille, I agree with everything you're saying. And I literally had to go back to that 2016 study article of the Watchtower that was talking about dressing and grooming, because that was always a challenge for me. I'm 5'11", you know, I couldn't wear the fishnet stockings without getting haggled. You know, I couldn't wear high heels without getting haggled. I was always a problem for someone else. So what you're saying is very true, because in that article, that entire section, everything is really about considering other people's feelings. You don't want to be a cause for stumbling. You want to, you know, look out for other people's interests. And they did never get to the point, but in one paragraph, what they did say is that if you choose to wear a beard, you cannot be in an appointed position.
Wow.
Let's talk about that. That the devil's in the details. So paragraph, I think it's like 16, is pretty much saying like, I mean, you can wear a beard if you want to. Yeah, but you're not about to be irreprehensible. And I think that's the word that they use. They use that word a lot.
But see, what's funny about that, that's a detail I didn't have. Because if you watch the video says that, you know, that brothers in the past who wore beards did not have appointed positions, but it presented it as if it was a choice. It did not say that it was, a, you know, a, that it was policy, which we know, but it's in writing. I didn't have that detail. I knew they were lying, but I didn't have that detail.
But isn't that crazy?
Well, you know something, I'll say it like this too. You know, going back many, many years, even before you all are talking about what you're talking about right now, we had a brother in my congregation in Michigan, and he was so humiliated because his father was an elder in the congregation. He's married with like 2 or 3 kids, but he refused to cut his beard. And so everybody in the congregation kept looking to him like, you know, he's spiritually weak and there must be something wrong with him. Doesn't he see his father's an elder? And you know, there was no choice. There was nothing about wearing a beard that was great back then. wearing a beard actually meant that you didn't love Jehovah. That's the way they presented it. Because if you love Jehovah, right, you would be reaching out for positions and titles and things like that, and you would be cutting that beard off your face. Yeah, and you got to remember that, you know, like, I think, you know, Lucille, you're out west, Midwest. You're in the Midwest like I was in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. And so in the Midwest, you're looking at more factory jobs. So can you imagine going to work with your coworkers and you're the only one clean shaven? That had to be hard for men back then, working in the in the plant, in the car industry and stuff like that. But this man wasn't having it. And so I'm pretty sure I would love to find out where he is today to see exactly how he feels, you know? You know, we got another sister chat coming in. All right. Hey, Daria, the grammar goddess.
Daria, I love you. Wow.
Yes.
Hi, how are you? We're Facebook friends. I said I had to come on in here. I'm doing a bunch of different things, but I couldn't let this pass. I just could not. Aww. I had to support my sister and, you know, join the chat, step into the room.
I love it.
Yes.
I mean, I love the seat, sis.
I love the video you did with, because I remember Lady C titled it the best therapy you'll ever get. And that video that you did was so powerful. I was like, wow, she's right. That was a great title for it.
Thank you. And I, you know, Lady C knows this. I have truly, truly been inspired by Lady C and Brother JT. And then watching, you know, Ivy's interview, watching your interview, Lucille, you all have really continued to sustain me. I appreciate your stories. I feel the energy through the interviews, you know. There's so much about this that connects us and so much that's that we all relate to, you know, but then everybody has a nuanced experience. And to me, that just speaks to how this religion just continues, even when you are clear and you're away from it and you've moved on. But because you have, because of your personal experience, and then because you have loved ones that are potentially still in it, and you're seeing them do these things, you know, I'm seeing family members wear pants to the meeting, like it's this freedom. And it's just blowing my mind. So yeah, I have tons of thoughts and feelings behind all of this. Grammar Goddess, thank you so much for saying that. You know, one of the things I've thought about is I call them, they're booby traps. Like, I don't know what I don't know until I arrive at a situation that makes me have to challenge what I was previously led to believe. Mm-hmm. That happens so many times from the moment I wake up to the moment I go to sleep. Because we were just hounded, programmed with certain things, you know, whether it was physical appearance, whether it was your routine, whether it was your thoughts, like they really drilled those things into us. And it's devastating.
It is. It really is devastating. You know, I was having a conversation with two really good girlfriends. And it's so interesting how this medium that we use works. This particular girlfriend, we knew each other well over two decades ago. She attended my JW wedding. Now I'm happily divorced for well over 10 years now, but this particular person attended my wedding. Her best friend sent my interview with Lady C to her and said, girl, you have to watch this. And she goes, I know her. And she's, oh, you know everybody. She said, no, I know her. She messaged me on socials. And it's just been such a beautiful experience to be in friendship and sisterhood with these women. And so to that point, we were having a conversation about all of this. And I've told Lady C this many times. I was never, ever going to be a good Jehovah's Witness. And the reason why is because, like I was saying to my girlfriends, I think this was yesterday, I said, you know, I just can't believe that when I see people with the beards posting up on pictures or in pants, posting up at the Kingdom Hall, cheesing and smiling, like, look at me, you know, and proudly talking about it. I cannot believe that at some point, no one has said to themselves, what am I doing? does this make sense? Because, and then I say, all right, Daria, because I always want to come from a place of love and not judge and hold space for people, because I used to be on the other side of that. And so then I said, okay, Daria, would you have questioned yourself? And the answer is absolutely 100% yes, because I questioned so many things, and there were so many doctrinal things that I didn't quite either understand, knew I didn't really believe it, or it just didn't make sense. But I just kind of went with the flow, because I had been conditioned since being a young child that this is what I was supposed to do. But I always question things, always. So I know that if I was literally getting ready to go to the Kingdom Hall and I'm putting on pants, I would have said to myself, what am I doing? I have to believe I would have done that. And that's the part that I think has been fascinating and shocking, that some of these people that I know personally, that I have intimate relationship with, that I love, they're not questioning it. And if they are, I don't know, you know?
Don't you think it's like a insult to intelligence too? Because like if you're sitting there at the Kingdom Hall and they're saying, well, you know what? And the way to make our people want to stay or respect us, to make us think that we're letting them do something, oh, you can wear pants now. Oh, you can wear a beard now. But it's like, well, that still doesn't excuse all the other things that you're telling us. That's real life stuff, like no blood, the CSA issues, the,
shunning,
you know, trying to get people not to go to college and further their education and stuff. Wearing pants and wearing a beard has nothing to do with all those things.
It has nothing to do with scripture. And you know, I'm not here. I made up my mind a long time ago that I was never, ever debating the Bible with anyone ever again in life. And so one of the things that I appreciate about my healing process, when I have found my people, my community in the community, one of the things that JT always says is you answer the question with the question. So if someone comes to me and says, well, what do you think about that? My question is going to be, what do you think? How do you feel about it? Tell me how you feel about it. Because I'm also at the point where while I'm completely 100% resolved, I have no doubt that this organization is a cult. It has zero merit to me. It's a kangaroo court. It's a house of cards, on and on and on and on. But prove me wrong. Stand 10 toes down in your faith. Step in it. Sit in it. And tell me. Make it make sense to me. And what I know for sure is that they just can't. They just can't. And so then with the people that I deal with, a lot of them, some of them, because they don't have the problem solving skills, that's something else that Watchtower has taken away from people. A part of that cognitive dissonance is the diminishing or stumping any problem solving skills. So then because they can't communicate, then it becomes adversarial. So I just let it go. But it's totally insulting. It's totally insulting when I see people in their close to twilight years proudly sporting a beard, come on.
I always thought it was crazy. I started questioning what you were saying. And like you said, make it make sense. So I would say, men can't have a beard, right? I said, how do I really want to feel about this? What do I want to say? And now they can have a beard. So I said, well, is it that big of a deal? You know, should I be, my feathers actually be ruffled over this particular change? And then I thought about it and I said, women don't have to take their breasts down when they enter puberty. So why does a man have to shave his beard? That's a natural progression from childhood to adulthood that Jehovah created, that he designed. And I said, wow, all that time, how come I didn't think about that when I was on the other side? You know, so now that I'm on this side, I'm sure you ladies too, Lucille, Lady C, you've interacted with people that you loved dearly. And you had to have some type of sympathy for them up until a point, right? Because you know them, they know you through and through, whether it was the person who brought you into the organization, a best friend, whatever. And like now, to see that person that I love not be able to connect the dots is extremely painful. It hurts me. And when she was asking me to come back, and I'm sure, you know, I said, what am I coming back to? She could not answer my question. Because I told her, you've been to college before. You've been a regional director of a corporation. I said, I'm going to need you to make this make sense for me now. I said, you're not supposed to be talking to me because I'm disfellowshipped. But I'll send you a letter of release, and you want to come and fly down and see me 3 days after you get the letter. And I ain't heard from you in 4 years. I said, I don't do reactive. I said, but now that you want to talk, I'm going to give you the opportunity to pursue peace. I'm going to give you the opportunity to leave your gift at the altar. I'm going to leave you the opportunity to forgive me for not coming back because I'm the one in the wrong, right?
Okay, said, so it sounds like, Rita, are you saying that this just happened with this
girl,
sister?
It just happened over the weekend with my friend of 20 years. And
okay.
She wanted me to come back, and I'm like, girl, like, let's talk. And she kept making it about everything else. About the years of abusive marriage and about the control and the gaslighting in the relationship and everything. Meanwhile, she was disfellowship for a year, inactive for like 15 years after that, and then only really been a witness for the last 5 years. I'm like, I've had my 10 toes down in this for the last 2 decades. Like, I don't want you to talk to me about nothing. I've read, I've researched. I told her, I went back to my notebooks from the assemblies and conventions back in 2020. You know, 2002, 2007, like, I was a huge note taker at conventions. Huge. I'm like, you can't tell me I don't know what I know, because now that I know, get out of here.
Well, you know that new rule that just came about where they're allowed, did you hear about that, where they can now call you? So that there's a new the new rule that they can call you now to invite you to the meeting, and that's what she was doing with you.
Listen, honey, she was trying to reach out to me back in December, because I send my release letters from the end of 1 year to the next, because yes, I do believe in that type of transitional, seasonal, astrological change. So yes, I send my release letters. That was in January. They hadn't made that announcement yet.
Yes, they have.
Then I told her, I said, Greet is not talking to me.
Yeah.
Hello.
I think they just made it because
C'est la vie.
Have you talked to Wendell? Have you talked to Wendell?
Girl.
So he's been talking about how people been calling him up,
inviting
him back
him.
To the meetings and stuff. Yeah.
Well, no one's bombarding me.
Right. But they shouldn't be calling all four of us, because remember, the rule is you can call anyone but someone considered an apostate. So they should not be kind. All four of us sitting here on the screen, none of us should be receiving the World Cup.
That's
because
right.
I was concerned. I've been out almost 40 years.
Wow.
Yes, almost.
I'm like,
40
girl, how old
years.
Are you? 43?
No. I am well into midlife. I have grandchildren.
Oh,
my
you
son
look
is
beautiful.
Thank you.
Your
I appreciate
skin,
it.
Like, I thought. Wow, that's all I'm
saying.
No, I am. Get your flowers now.
And I felt like, I said, oh no, Lucille, now they're going to start coming to your house. Well, you know, first of all, let me just keep it 100. We own a duplex, and I have put this duplex on do not return. I have called the Kingdom Hall. I have talked to the elder and said, look, this is, you don't come through here, because they had started becoming very invasive. They were, you know, coming back to my daughter-in-law, to my son and daughter-in-law's house next door. They were then going to the back door when they couldn't reach them at the front door. I mean, it was a big thing. And you have to understand, my son has not been raised in this. So to him, this is a benign religion. You know, he's like the typical public who thinks, oh, you know, these are Jehovah's Witnesses. You know, it's no different than, you know, the non-denominational people knocking on your door. And I'm like, no. This, my grandbabies are not getting caught up in this nonsense and foolishness. But what I want to say to you, Ivy, is this, is that sometimes I find people will try to draw you back into something because they don't have the strength to leave. We always have to realize that when people approach us with advice, you got to first figure out why they're providing it. We don't always know people's motivations, and people may present something to you as if they care about you, when really the reality of it is that they're trying to find a reason why they should stay. They don't want to do the work, the mental work that it takes to have to figure out whether or not I need to be here anymore. Because think about it. When you talk about God, that's a scary thing. Nobody wants to be wrong when you're talking about God, eternity, all that type of stuff, especially if you've grown up in that. And that's in any faith. That's not just the Jehovah's Witnesses. So if you're afraid to have those conversations with yourself, if you're afraid to sit down with a therapist to discuss this, you're going to then try to pull people back in that you know or familiar with, because it's easier to do that than it is for you to go through that growing process. You always have to be concerned about someone's motivation, even if they're your friend, when they approach you, because not everybody's motivation is righteous. And it's not intentional all the time. Sometimes it's unintended.
I completely agree with you, Lucille. And I just want to add to it. What I always remember, it's completely what you said. And I'd like to add to that, that a lot of times people really are well-intentioned. However, they don't, I've said this to Lady C before too. A lot of people don't have the courage and the strength, or like you say, the capacity or the bandwidth to be judged, to be scrutinized, to step outside of what you know is your social circle, your environment. A lot of people can't do it. I'm not disfellowshipped. I'm not disassociated. I faded, right? And I've been out since 2011, okay? So it's been a minute. But what I've realized, even for myself, where I am now in 2024 is certainly not where I was in 2011. And I knew I was done in 2011. But my understanding of things is even more aware. You know, and so a lot of times people, they're either looking for a reason or a way to hitch themselves to your wagon, or they're trying to find the path of least resistance. Well, if she could just come on back and change her mind a little bit, just show up, then it'll be easier for me to talk to her and I won't feel so conflicted and I won't have to deal with any friction, any static. I think that there is a lot of that. And then my therapist, I want to go back because you also said something about the work. You're dealing in most instances with people who have done zero self-work. They haven't gone to therapy. That isn't encouraged. And like what my therapist told me, dealing with my loved ones, you've got people who've been doing this for well over four decades. If they are going to actually sit with the fact that they made a mistake that has lasted that long, that's devastating. And some people mentally don't have the capacity to deal with it. I think it's identity. People stay involved in this. They stay connected to it for so many reasons that have nothing to do with scripture. It has nothing to do with God. It has nothing to do with belief. And more and more and more and more and more, that's what I'm learning. And there's all these different levels of nuances. Some of the people that I see coming up out of this now, what I'm realizing, what one of my friends said to me, she said, you have to remember, they're younger than you. And they're newer to this than you are. And it looked completely different to you than what it looks like to them, because they're at a different stage in this. And I hadn't thought about that, because I'm like, what am I missing? What am I missing? So someone... And then there's, you know, I had a loved one say to me fairly recently, I don't even think you remember what you were a part of. And I was a little like, what does that mean? But then I sat and thought about it. There's terminology that I say right now. And again, I only left. It's been a minute, but it was only 2011, 2012 that I, you know, matriculated on out. But just since then, they don't say things like the society. When I say something like that, for certain people, the antennas go up, because they're like, we don't talk like that. You know, those are things that I'm not paying attention to, because I really am done with this. I don't believe it. It's not the truth. I'm still a believer. I believe in God. I read my Bible. I pray. If I decide I want to go hear a good choir, if I decide I want to go hear someone speak, I will do that. I'm clear on all of that with everyone in my circle. Jehovah's Witness, not Jehovah's Witness, whatever. But when I talk to people who are in this and I say certain things, so I've realized their whole branding, their whole marketing, everything has changed drastically since I've been gone. Some of the stuff that I see, the videos, y'all, we had to work when we were in this. We had to study. We couldn't just go and stand next to a cart and hand somebody a card and direct them to a website. We actually had to like defend our faith.
You're right. You are absolutely 100% right.
What I'm seeing now, mm-hmm. and I think for me, that's also part of the reason why, you know, because I have certain loved ones who are done and they're like, okay, I'm done. I don't need to be on YouTube. I don't need to be over on Reddit. I don't need to be in this Facebook group. And I respect that. But because I have loved ones in this that are really important to me, I don't mind being the ops because I want to stay in it. I want to know what's going on so I can stay ahead of it. I feel like, you know, maybe it's my place in family, in nuclear family. I'm the oldest. I'm the oldest daughter. You know, I'm a doer. I'm a caregiver. I'm a provider. You know, that's just how I'm wired. So maybe that's a part of it for me. I think I find healing in this and in community. So that's a big part of it. But this looks completely different right now than it did when I grew up in it and what it was for me as an adult.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Daria. And when I was coming along in the religion, you know, there were people, I remember this sister in my congregation, and she was so upset because when she became one of Jehovah's Witnesses, it was in the 80s. And she discovered that her grandfather was a Jehovah's Witness back in the early days when it first started getting started, maybe in the 20s, right? And she goes, can you believe my grandfather was a Jehovah's Witness and he left the truth, you know? But what she probably didn't realize is that as time went on for him, the religion changed just like it did for us, like we're seeing now. Because I don't know if you all know this, but back in the day, the Jehovah's Witnesses used to celebrate Christmas.
Yes.
And they did that at Bethel and things like that. And then they stopped doing that. And I remember this one brother was telling me that he remembered going out in field service in his military uniform. He remembered they were saying if you went to war, then just shoot your gun in the air so that you wouldn't shoot someone on the battlefield. That was the kind of jokes that was coming along with the older brothers.
Wow.
When I was, you know, in the congregation, because I was just a little kid, and I was just listening to all their experiences. And then I feel like I've always stated that I feel like people use this religion like it's a superstitious thing, like a rabbit's foot. Just like Lucille was talking about, people just want to know where they're going to be. People want to know what their mortality is going to be. And I remember, like, when you would say things, especially people who are really, really religious outside of the Jehovah's Witnesses. So if you would, I remember these guys I work with and I said something and they said, oh, you're going to, a fire and brimstone is going to come down. I didn't even really say anything. I don't even remember what it was, but it was very insignificant. But they believed that if you said something or you didn't go to church or you didn't do something, how God's wrath and anger was going to come at you. And I remember being in my philosophy class in college, and my philosophy professor was an atheist, and he was walking back and forth giving his lecture. And a lot of the people in my class were Christians, and, you know, they went to church, they were religious. And he was walking back and forth, and he was talking about Nietzsche and all them and all these different philosophers and stuff. And the people were getting really kind of concerned about what he was saying. But this is the class we had to take to graduate. And all of a sudden, a black crow came and tried to fly into the window. And you know, if the window was open, it would have probably flown into the teacher. So they said, oh, my God, God is trying to get at you. He's trying to tell you something. Just because that black crow kind of like got lost his way and flew into this window, they tried to say that the spirits were getting ready to say something to this teacher who was giving this lecture about whatever it was he was saying that was not going along with what they believed in. So everybody wants to know when they die, where are they going? Am I going to be resurrected to heaven, or am I going to go in a paradise earth like Jehovah's Witnesses believe, or are you going to an eternal damnation like hell, right? So I think that, like, for Rita, your friend wants you back because she's been indoctrinated just enough to believe it. And like Daria said, they're not willing to put the effort in. They don't want to do the research, but they just like they're in their comfort zone. And their comfort zone is, I'm at the Kingdom Hall. I might not be doing everything that they tell me to do. They don't got to do a lot of work now, but they're still indoctrinated just enough to remain there, to not grow, not enjoy their life, not live life to the fullest and get everything they can out of it, because they do believe that there's going to be, if they die, a resurrection, or they're going to live right into the new system.
You know, what's so interesting about that? That is a really good point. But what is fascinating for me personally, I am in this space now. Like I said, I'm a believer. I'm a very spiritual person. I feel more connected to God now at this point in my life than I ever did as one of Jehovah's Witnesses. And to that point, I sit in a space where I still have a lot of questions. And the reality is I'm very comfortable being in that space of having questions or having unanswered questions or not knowing. And I talk to people who are Christian and they love God and they are in it. They're very religious, if that's how, if you want to label them. But these are genuine people who I respect and believe are sincere. And they have said to me that they have questions. And so I don't have all the answers, but what I know is that if I am on this earth and I'm being the best version of Daria and who that is, and I'm treating people right, and I'm a woman of integrity, then whatever's going to happen when my time comes, I'm not concerned. And to me, that's what faith is about. And so these people, because that's, you hit on a good point, because what I'm seeing now with a lot of people who are coming up out of this religion, and I find it's certain demographics, it's certain communities, they are so devastated about the fact that they're not going to live forever, or that they have been lied to. Okay. And so I see them all every day. It's a new YouTube channel popping up, and I'll see people come on and they are angry and they are venting because they really believe that they were unique, that they were elite, that they were special, that they were like chosen people. And I think that if you're really doing the self-work, and if you are really coming out of something like a high control group, you don't want to call it a cult because it's too jarring, fine. You're coming up out of this, but you need to check in. You need to check in here and go within and figure out who you are. How do you want to be? Like I told Lady C, how do you want to show up in the world? And if you're really doing that work, you're going to be hurt. There's a lot of pain associated with all of this. We're all experiencing it, and there are different stages, but you're not so fixated. If you're really focusing on yourself and how you want to be and the type of person that you want to be, you're not so fixated on what's going to happen. Yeah. Because you're good. I don't have the answers for everything. And I'm really okay with that, because guess what? I know who I am, and I know how I'm showing up and what I want to do and what my passions are and what I want to do in the world.
Do you all feel like you were in the religion because you were going to get that new system, or were you just in the religion because you thought it was the right thing to do, and you felt like that was just something that just came along with being that good person that you were supposed to be?
I'll let someone else go first.
Lucille.
I mean, I think that, I mean, I was brought in as an infant. Mm-hmm. So you see your parents in it. Here's the thing. My father did not believe everything they taught. My father had other Bibles in his house. He had watchtowers that dated back years. I'm talking about 1940s, maybe even to, you know, I'm talking about like the original ones where you, where the, even the, everything was different. The font, you know, the brand logo, all of that, 1940s, maybe even back to 1914. So, but the thing was, is my parents were not having the conversations with me about, this is what we believe and this is what we don't believe. They're taking us to this place all this time, you know, where you're being indoctrinated 3 days a week, you're going to all these assemblies. And I was a child who didn't question. I was a highly sensitive kid. Highly sensitive children tend to be rule followers. So we tend to be very intuitive about the culture. We pick it up very quickly. We learn what the rules are and we tend to follow it. We're very conscientious. My brother was different. He went to my father one day and he said, why can't we listen to gospel music? And my dad said to him, well, what does gospel music talk about? And he said, it talks about God and Jesus. And my father said, so what's the problem? But so he asked a question, he got an answer, but you have a different child with a different personality type who's very intuitive, who learns the culture, who learns the rules. The parents are not having the conversations about, this is what we do agree with that they teach, and this is what we don't agree with. Because my father used to conduct the Watchtower study, and there would be weekends, that Sundays, that he would sit with us, and I would ask him, why are you sitting here? And he said, oh, I would just want to spend time with my family. My mother later told me he was not telling the truth, that those were the Sundays that he was telling the elders, what is being taught in this Watchtower is not lining up with the Bible. So I'm not going to teach it. If you want to teach it, get somebody else to teach it. And see, back then, and in those days, you could say those things. And as long as it wasn't, you didn't have these conversations with other Christians and allowed the body to remain in unity, you weren't put out. You know, so, but he would sit down and say, no, I'm not doing this. But the thing was, even though I was seeing that in the home, oh, he's got different Bibles. Oh, he's got all this, you know, literature from way back. My father started going to college in his 30s. Even though I'm seeing this, that was playing in the peripheral. I was still focused on the fact they're making us study the Watchtower. We were required to give one comment every, you know, when we went. My parents are not having conversations saying that they're disagreeing. So even though there were things in my environment telling me, hey, there's another way, or my parents are not buying this completely,
I didn't resonate.
It didn't resonate. And I'm going to tell you why this is important. I now, based on that, have a very different viewpoint about rebellion. So I haven't told my story on this show, but basically I ended up running away at 16. It was a highly publicized case in this, in my particular city. And I ended up filing for emancipation. I was even in a national magazine. A reporter reached out to me about my emancipation status. And, you know, religions always teach you that rebellion is wrong. But I realized that based upon my personality type as a highly sensitive kid, that may have been the only opportunity that I had to get out. It was considered rebellious. But the thing about it is that sometimes, you know, rebellion is not a bad thing. We've given it the bad thing because we want people to conform. And when somebody says, no, I'm not going to conform, that's considered rebellious. But I think about with my personality type that I probably would not have had another opportunity to come out of this faith until that natural maturation process had occurred, where you're in your 30s and your 40s and your brain is waking up and you're like, wait a minute, this doesn't make sense. But I didn't question, you know, my parents just, they followed the line. My father was a pioneer. He preached 90 hours a month and all of that, claimed to be part of the 144,000. And what happened for me was that I did not like being in this religion. I never liked it as a kid. I would be in the Kingdom Hall daydreaming the entire 2 hours I was there. And I had to make sure I was aware enough because my father had a requirement that you had to give one comment. So I had to be aware. Okay, let me raise my hand, give this one comment. I'm gonna go back to my thoughts. But the thing about it is that the religion takes away your ability to follow that intuition that says something's wrong here. Completely takes it away. They tell you everything to do. And so you have this intuition for a reason, but I was interpreting that as I'm just a bad Jehovah's Witness. I just don't want to follow the rules. I don't like this. I don't like that. Instead of realizing, no, your inner person was telling you this is not a fit. You need to research this. You need to learn about it. But based on the personality type that I had as a young person, I would not have done that. You know, it wasn't until, because when I walked away from the witnesses after I ran away from home, and by this point, my whole family has come out of it. It wasn't until midlife, I was sitting with therapists and I was like, this 1914, this teaching about Jesus coming back and, you know, surveying all the religions and, you know, and deciding that the Jehovah's Witnesses were the right ones. She said, yeah, like Jesus just tiptoeing around. It was like, this doesn't even make sense. You know what I mean? First of all, it's not biblical. And then secondly, it's like, this doesn't make sense. What proof do you have for this? There is absolutely no proof, no scriptural background, no nothing about this. But I, you know, I just think that people... It's not that they don't want to do the work. It's just that with religion, they're afraid. Like you said, Lady C, when you're talking about mortality and all that stuff, but we also have to remember this is cultural too, because if you go into another land where religion is not the the prominent thing, those types of issues won't manifest that way. It'll be another way. Maybe the political group is indoctrinating people or whatever. But you know, our country here in the U.S. is very religiously based. I'll say on the face, because there's a whole bunch of nasty, dirty stuff going on when they want to talk about we're a Christian country. It's like, no, we're not Christian, because if you really think about what people are doing behind closed doors, it's un-Christian. So I don't know. I'm just glad I'm out. I'm glad I'm out.
How about you, Daria?
Well, I was just going to say, I have so much to say, but number one, I did what I did more than anything else because I didn't want to disappoint my parents. I don't think that I ever, even when I tried to visualize myself in a world where I'm petting on lions and tigers and bears and we're walking around, and when they would talk about rebuilding the earth, none of that made sense to me, if I'm being completely honest. It was never about that. It was about doing something that I knew made my parents happy, and I was always trying to find a way to do it where I could still feel normal. I could still feel a little bit normal like everybody else. I was never, ever going to be a great Jehovah's Witness. I just wasn't. So I think once I really started to sit with the teachings, it was easier for me to disconnect from that. The part that is a struggle is when I have, you know, loved ones and stuff, and we're not in consistent communication and things like that, and it becomes hurtful or frustrating or what have you, but you work through it. But one thing I wanted to touch on as well, a loved one said this to me, and she said it just so matter-of-factly about 3 years ago. We were sitting up talking, and she goes, I just think Jehovah's Witnesses don't read their Bibles. She said, because if they really read their Bibles, you know, a lot of this stuff, they would, you know, stop and think about it. And you ladies, it was the way that she said it. And I literally thought about that. And I said to myself, now I know that I spent hours and hours studying. I hated field service. I was never a regular pioneer. I would do the auxiliary pioneering in the pioneer season, where they would say, okay, everybody's gonna sign. I would do that. I was never gonna be a pioneer. I never wanted to go to Bethel. I felt like doing full-time service, that's what they used to call it back then, I don't know what they're saying now, and going to Bethel, all of that seemed like a vow of poverty to me. And that just wasn't, that wasn't my MO. That was never going to work for me. So it was, I don't even want to say it was performative, because I literally had watchtowers and had post-its and would have notes and da-da-da-da-da. But what I realized, to the person that said this to me, to her point, they don't just pick up their Bible and start reading. You're being told what to read. You have a guide, whether it is a book, whether it is a pamphlet, a brochure, or a watchtower, or you're doing what you call research and you're using books they don't even use anymore. Back in the day, the Aid book. Back in the day, the Insight books. Back in the day, the Kingdom Proclaimers books, whatever.
Like JT says, from truth to trash.
Truth to trash. Truth to trash, right. That is whatever it is, you still use that as the jump off point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so you were told, like Lucille said, you were always told what to do. So it was very easy, because that is the structure that you were approaching scripture, religion, mm-hmm. belief, whatever you want to call it, whatever, because yeah. you're approaching it from that standpoint, then everything's been curated for you. So it's very easy for them to cherry pick something about blood and you go with it and say, okay, well, that's what the Bible says. Okay, well, then that's what it says. This is the truth. I'm not supposed to take blood. When if you are using your critical thinking and you're approaching it from the standpoint of just picking up this book and reading and allowing that process to just happen, your perspective is completely different. And so I just think, like Lucille said, I'm on the other side of this. I had to reintroduce myself to faith. I had to reintroduce myself to belief. I believe in meeting people where they are. I don't care about your beliefs or what you believe. I say this to my loved ones who are not witnesses all the time. That part is none of my business. I don't care. I don't even care what the witnesses are doing. I don't care. It has zero merit to me. And I don't care that my parents were trying to give me a good foundation. I don't care about that, because they did, and they got some great kids out of it, but that are doing amazing, incredible things. But there were other ways to get that foundation. Yeah. And we don't fit, none of us fit the mold of what they told us was going to happen if we said deuces. None of us. And it's so crazy to me that people are, you know, sticking with it. They're sticking with it. But again, I personally believe that I think there's more people that are walking around in silence. They're probably what we call PMO, physically and mentally out. I think there's a lot more of that. And I think that it's courage. People are afraid to do it afraid. I'm not afraid to do it afraid. Lucille, I shake the table. I was not the kid. Now, I did want to please my parents. I was more afraid of getting in trouble with my parents than I ever was of Jehovah, ever. So all that I did was to make them happy. I don't care about that anymore. I have made you proud. I do not... You're upset because I don't want to be a witness? I don't care. Be mad. You got so many other things.
And you know what, too, about this whole discussion that we're having? And I know we're talking about Jehovah's Witnesses. And that was what I was saying before, because no matter what religion you go to, people have been fed a script. My father was raised a Catholic, was so, so mad. When he was a kid, he was hungry and he ate the hot dog at school on Friday. And they told him that he was going to go to hell and burn. because you were not supposed to eat meat on Friday. And he had to stand somebody down on the internet one time because they told him that is not true. Catholics did not believe that. And my dad said, when I was coming along in this religion, you could not eat meat on Fridays. They relaxed that law or that rule. And then you could start eating fish. And then some people, they changed it, right? He was so mad for years after that because he said as a little kid, he was so scared, frightened to death about, he goes, and he said, and you know why? He told me, this is what he told me. I said, well, Dad, didn't you guys have confession? And you could confess that? And my dad said, yes, we did. And he said, but you know what? He said, I was not sorry that I ate that meat. And he said, so I wasn't confessing that. Yeah. And so, you know, because he didn't want to confess that because he felt like he didn't feel sorry that he ate it because he said, I was hungry that day. So, and he was even doing critical thinking back then, you know, even as a Catholic.
Yes.
And realizing that this was just a crazy teaching, you know. Yeah. And so everybody's caught up in some kind of religious belief. And I'm telling you, we get emails from so many people.
Yeah.
And we get emails from people who are not witnesses. And we get emails from people saying to us, why don't you talk about other religions besides Jehovah's Witnesses? Because they're not the only ones that have crazy beliefs.
Right.
You know, so people are going through a lot. And that's why I can appreciate what you're saying, Daria, about how you can meet people where they are. You don't care about their religion.
I believe that the worst disservice that I could ever do on the other side of this, and I, you know, not only did I come up out of this religion, I've had some serious health challenges that I've overcome. I've overcome, you know, job loss and all kinds of things, right? But the worst thing that I could ever imagine doing is sitting on the other side of this and not unwilling to communicate and hear people. If someone explains to me that they're an atheist, before I haunt in and attack and, you know, start to criticize or judge, I want to hear their story. I want to understand. And I think that for so many people that are in a part of organized religion, something that I will never be a part of any kind. But that does, you know, like I said, I'm a believer. If I want to go hear me a good choir, if it's somebody that I enjoy their sermons and I want to go hear them, I'm going because that serves my soul. Mm-hmm. But the worst thing I could do is sit up and not allow someone to tell, to explain. And that's something that witnesses don't know how to do. They want you to accept them with all these, you know, with no conditions, be as unconditional as possible. But right. The minute you ask that of them, they can't do it. So why would I, on the other side of that, approach anyone like that? It's just, it makes no sense to me. It makes zero sense to me. And I realize that there are a lot of other religions that have some similarities, but the Jehovah's Witnesses are unique. And I believe that the light that we are shedding on their policies and their teachings and their doctrines and the culture, I think it's important because, you know, every group has their day. And I think it's important that we highlight that. Now, along the way, sure, we can connect with people and hear their stories. But what you're doing specifically, the work that you and JT do and so many others and all of us when we're sharing our story, there is a particular demographic of people that are really being soothed and helped and feeling seen and feeling heard. So I think it's just so important that we shed a light on it. And you know, one time, Lady C, you said to me, and I was like, my goodness, you said, Daria, think back when we were young and we would be out in field service and you get someone coming to your door or you go to someone's door and they meet you and they receive you. And then they pull up a book or show you something and look, you all had this. And we were, oh, that's fake. You're lying. That's not real. Well, hindsight, decades later, that was old literature. That was old light. So right. I think And they're doing the same thing right now. They're moving the needle right now. You know, they want us to seem crazy because we're so like, really? You sit up here with a whole beard on looking goofy and we're just supposed to act like you all didn't. I have people in my life, loved ones that got chastised horribly for just a little bit of fuzz.
5 o'clock
just to act like y'all didn't just change this. Or I can remember breaking my neck to get home from work when I was here in Michigan and when I lived in New York City to change clothes so that I could have a skirt on for the meeting. I remember that. And you all want to sit up here and post in pants like it's, oh, look at us. Fashion plate.
Come on back to the Kingdom Hall now because you can wear pants.
Right. You know, like you want us to just act right. Like I didn't do this.
I think Rita wants to make a point because I'm, mm-hmm. Okay.
There's so many things because I want to unpack Lucille's. I want to unpack Daria's. I want to get to your question, Lady C. It's just like, man, this is absolutely amazing. I feel like we should be on here with like Sunday cocktails talking.
Yes. Like the queens do.
Spilling the tea. Yeah. You know, one theme is beach hats. The next theme is fedoras. I don't know. But okay, so Lady C, how did I get the truth? Through my mom. That's plain and simple. The thing that made me stick to it was the name Jehovah. Even when we weren't witnesses, my mom would say Psalms 83:18. You can go there in any Bible and you can find God's actual name. So my great grandparents, pastor, Eastern Star, the whole situation, they had Bibles. I mean, when the Bibles looked like dictionaries, they were so thick, you know? And I would always go into Psalms 83:18. There was the name Jehovah. So I'm like, that's the truth, you know, that's a fact. It adds up. So later when she actually took to the witnesses and we kept attending the meetings and stuff, of course, I'm a kid, you know, I'm under the age of 10 or whatever. I'm just going to go along with the flow. However, you know, I didn't want to do it because I thought it was whack. It was too restrictive. So the thing that got me to come back, as you know, was the Armageddon and not wanting to incur Jehovah's wrath. Like I honestly felt like, and I still feel like I had a relationship with whatever that heavenly creator, energy source, whatever title you want to give it, I always felt like I had a connection with it even before I was in a structured religion that was branded with the person's name. So that's why I stayed, you know, and that's why I didn't want to displease him, you know. So I'm just the reverse of you, Daria, where my parents could have got the boot and then I was like, oh my gosh, Jehovah, you know, I didn't want that situation happening. So, and that's pretty much why I stayed the whole time up until the last 20 years. That's why I stayed married for 17 years, you know, never stepped on it. Like I was legit type A personality. We have to do this. I'm making a list. I'm checking it twice, you know, but when I started going through challenges or when I started to reach my limit with my challenges, it really made me take a pause as to the love, the camaraderie, the true teamwork, like all those things. And I'm thinking I'm sitting up here with two active Bible studies, single sister due to a separation, a husband that everybody knows what the truth is about. I have a minor child. I'm going to all the meetings. I'm getting great hours, doing all the things. Have a misstep and I get disfellowship. To me, I couldn't wrap my head around that because I know other situations and other people who were legit, like completely violating the code of ethics and things like that, right? So it makes sense. But me, I'm like, how did I get treated like that? And then after the fact, when I was pleading for my daughter, trying to get her support and making sure she had association, because you already know when you got one member in your household disfellowship, the entire roof foundation, you know, is plague, is leprosy. People don't want to come over. They don't want to do anything. So I wanted to make sure that that didn't happen with my daughter. Because I've always been of that mindset, like that particular rule, I always felt like it was way too extreme. I always felt like it made no sense. Just because I did something wrong doesn't mean that your daughter should be able to come over to my child's house, unless I'm sitting on the couch smoking crack or something. But like, let's be serious, you know? So that's what my whole situation was. And then being out, Daria and Lucille said something about having that awareness, being emotionally aware, having what they call now emotional intelligence. That's really what it is. And learning to be uncomfortable, learning to actually sit with yourself. Because one thing I've had to do when I'm still doing is making those conscientious decisions in the moment. What type of person do I want to be? Who am I actually? Because when you realize that you were on autopilot, when you realize that you were under someone else's control, you really come out very disoriented, because if everything was a lie, then maybe me being a good person is a lie too. Maybe I'm not mild-mannered and patient and all those other things, because guess what? I don't have Jehovah's Spirit anymore, and those are fruitages of his spirit. Oh my God, what am I going to do? You know, so it's really a lot of mental and emotional work and the judgment, right? Like I'm like you guys now, where it's like, it doesn't matter. If you are a decent human being, I don't care about what you believe. I don't care what your sexual orientation is. I don't care what you feel like you want to present as. I don't care about none of those things. If you are a good human being, if you are kind, I don't care. And you have respect and dignity. Nothing else is my concern. So that's just the space that I'm glad I feel spiritually and emotionally that I've been able to come to, and meeting people where they're at. Because guess what? I've been on both sides. I've been single. I've been a wife. You know, I've had so much, you know, in common with just mankind that it doesn't make sense for me to not be able to actually have empathy for someone else. And I feel like as a witness, that really is lacking. They always want to talk about the pity Jesus felt for people and this and that. But being a witness, you don't really have empathy. You don't. You could, if that's the case, then you could not roll thunderous judgments, really condemnation. So it's beyond judging, because we judge what to wear based off of the weather, right? But we still go outside and move about. Condemnation, condemning something is completely different. You give it no option other than what it is. And that mindset is hard to shake sometimes. It really is, because there are a lot of common threads between the Jehovah's Witness faith and other Christian faiths in terms of beliefs, right? Like you said, Lady C. But it is very nuanced when it comes to the psychology behind how we receive the information that we were received. I don't personally don't have the experience, but I have a little bit being Baptist growing up with my family. That's their predominant Christian denomination is baptism or Baptist. But I don't feel the same way about Jehovah's Witness. The Baptist church wasn't gaslighting me. They weren't love bombing me. See, these are things I know now, but I didn't know those things before. I didn't look at religious systems as domestication, systems of control, right? Just like how it just depends on where you go and how they're pushing out their content. That's going to make them that high pressure situation, which is not psychologically good for most people, right? Because they're going to feel like they're bound to something. And for those of like ladies here on this call, we want to fly, you know, we want to explore, we want to have good experiences, we want to enjoy life. And I realize I've learned through therapy, through the work, through the pain, the agony. I had to learn to unpack a lot, and I'm still unpacking a lot. And learning to live in the now is basically where I'm at. So it's so funny. It's quite a conundrum, actually. So I'm here presently. I have no real indication of when I'm going to be triggered into the bag, right? But I realize now that when I'm triggered to look at my past and get all woe with me, or get mad and angry and get into that really negative space, right? I have to remember that's the past. There is nothing you can do about it. It's gone. It's behind you. But what I will miss out on is the now if I keep allowing myself to stay trapped in the past. It's a trap. It's another form of enslavement from my perspective. But then as a witness, I was always geared to look forward. Constantly, everything is in the future. So I'm putting off all the now for the sake of the future. So in no instance have I learned how to live in the now.
Just be present.
You know what
I like to say? To be present, to enjoy the moment, to take the highs and the lows as they are, to breathe, to be fully present. Like, you know, and that's a learning process too. And it takes a lot of heavy lifting. It takes a lot of having to catch yourself, to be active, to snap yourself either out of the past or slingshot yourself back to the present. It's a lot. And like you lady said, I can understand why it's just easier for some people to just stay, especially if you did have a measure of belief in the scriptures, right? Because I know you guys remember, you know, you have sayings of everlasting life. Where else is there for me to go? I know there could be people, including my friend, who feels that way. Like, okay, now that I realize what this is, but where else am I going to go? Because the witnesses have done a great job, a great smear campaign against other religions. So if this is what you thought it was and it's no longer, you're like, what other option do I have? I guess I'm going to choose the lesser of two evils and just rock with what I've been doing. Like, I'm gonna just stay where I'm at, you know? So I agree with the comfortability of staying someplace and, you know, not feeling like you have any options. I mean, my mom, I love her. I have empathy for her because she's given the last 40 years or so of her life to that. And she's given up all of her now for the future. And her physical future is not this world, the society that we live in. It doesn't make it easy for someone who's a senior citizen to rebound when you didn't invest in anything and you don't have any Roths or 401ks or, you know, you worked the job that was going to help you serve full time. What you going to rely on? Social Security at the rate of inflation? And Lady C, you was telling me about some financial literacy tips. Like, it's extremely, it makes sense that they're going to stay.
Yeah.
You know,
and
sense.
I think, and I really appreciate you ladies coming on to share your experiences. And I know I've been gone longer than all of you leaving the organization over 20 years ago. And I really feel like this has been a group therapy session, because when I left, I didn't have this kind of camaraderie ship. Mm-hmm. We didn't have anybody. And I think you guys summed up so much. You summed up a lot of things that I didn't know how to say, or mm-hmm. I didn't know how to express, because it was just me. I didn't know what was going on. And for a long time, you know, I just felt alone. Mm-hmm. Just no one was there. Just you had people that were not Jehovah's Witnesses, but they didn't understand what you were going through. And so we had friends that we never told them that we were Jehovah's Witnesses and ex-witnesses until like 3 or 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. But it made life much easier, because once they found that out, they started telling all these people. And so JT and I were saying, you know, some of the feedback that we got, people had best friends that they were Jehovah's, that they were friends with, that were Jehovah's Witnesses. And we said that we would have had a much harder time if people would have known that we were witnesses, because they were like, well, my best friends are witnesses. What's wrong with them? Or their friends were telling them that we were bad people because we probably got disfellowship. So people were looking at you differently once they found out that you were a Jehovah's Witness and you left. And so it was an interesting situation, but it's just been a lot of learning, just a whole lot of learning. But I think that, you know, providing this platform for other people to come and share their experiences also gave me a shot in the arm. So even though Daria's saying, oh, you know, we really like the things that you and JT did, but you don't know what you've done for me too. Because when I first started out on this journey online, which is over about 10 years ago online in the YouTube space, I was still going through some stuff too, but I was learning from people that was coming, sitting on the couch talking about their issues.
Right.
And you were bringing things together. And I was like, wow, I felt like that too, but I didn't know how to express it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just wasn't coming to me the way, you know, people were bringing it to me, because you had a chance to go online and see other people's, you know, experiences, and you got a chance to meet somebody else and be friends online at least. But it was like, man, because when we left, there was no YouTube, you know, there was nobody giving their experience. And we had this one lady, she drove all the way from Chicago to Washington, D.C. just to meet us.
Wow.
She said she wanted to see ex-witnesses. We're still friends with her today.
Nice.
And it was just, and that was the early days of ex-Jehovah's Witness. You had to get in the car and drive to somebody's house to see them in person or just to see them. But now, like, you know, I think, well, I've met Daria and I met Ivy in person, and Lucille and I haven't connected yet in person. But it's just amazing how we met so many people, and we've never seen them before, but we're really good friends with them. You know?
You know what that sounds like? Girls trip.
Right.
I am all exactly. about a good time, ladies. I love connecting. I love uplifting. Like, this has been such a freeing experience. As a matter of fact, I was going to share just a quick line with you guys. I've been doing a lot of research, and I've been exploring other belief systems too. So I don't necessarily consider myself a Christian or this or this or that. I'm a spiritual person. I love the positive energy, the good vibes, and I realize that there are a lot of other cultures or civilizations that existed before what we were taught. You know, there was a lot of other belief systems. It's so funny. I was talking to my partner, and he says, you know, what if this is the way that it was actually meant to be, because we're supposed to figure it out? He said, because if we go off the way we were taught, after all, it was Jehovah who created all these languages. He confused the language. He says, so we have really have different feelings about things based off of the words, the sounds that are attached to the meaning, to the thing, right? So if I say God, Jehovah, Lord, Allah, depending on how you hear or receive those sounds, you're either going to have a positive reaction or a negative reaction, right? But that's because society has programmed us to be a certain way. So we explore the full gamut of possibilities when it comes to belief systems. For example, would African-Americans be Christians had it not been for colonization? So we really allow our minds to like go to these places that were previously considered extreme because they are plausible. You can theorize about these things, you know? So it's been fun to be free like that, to be able to really try to see someone like from someone else's perspective, even spiritually. What is their perspective? How do they walk through life? What are their guiding principles and why? Where can I see the commonalities? Reincarnation, immortality of the soul, whatever. It's no one wants to die at the end of the day. You know, we all want to continue on. We don't want to be forgotten, you know? So I have loved being able to just explore commonalities in humanity. So I'm all about freedom. So in this book, I don't know if you ever heard of it, The Four Agreements.
Yes.
Amazing book, right?
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Yes.
And it's so simple.
Yes.
But it's in the section Breaking Old Agreements. And it says, true freedom has to do with the human spirit. It is the freedom to be who we really are. And I just thought that that was such a profound statement, because as a Jehovah's Witness, I know personally I did not allow people to be who they were simply because I prejudged or already had a pre-programmed response in my head as to what to say when I heard certain words, you know. And so I just always want people to feel free around me. Now that I know that I was trapped and I was entrapping other people, I'm all about liberating. I'm all about liberating people and just respecting the beautifulness that makes them unique in who they are.
Yeah, that is beautiful.
There's a couple of things I'd like to say. You know, when Darren, when you were talking about you didn't like to go out and field service, I didn't either. And when you think about it, honestly, there's a scripture in the Bible that talks about all the that, you know, the Christians making up the body of Christ. And some people would, you know, are good for teaching, or it has all these different bodies and
things.
And so it's like when I think about the witnesses. Focus on that, on that you have to go out and field service. That may not be what you were, what your part in the body was about. But what's funny is I say that to say, I have recently started thinking that the Jehovah's Witnesses would have been better off if they had of created themselves as a brotherhood, similar to entering the priesthood, because they're making this a religion. But the reality of it is that with, you know, all the they take away everything, all the fun, all the joy, with the constant focus on preaching, don't do this, don't do that, you know, the very austere type of living standards. To me, they should have been a spiritual vocation. They should have established themselves as a priesthood. They established themselves as a religion, when the reality of it is that it doesn't fit for children. It doesn't fit for families, the way they are set up. This really should have been a brotherhood, but they layered a religion on top of it, because you're conscripting children to a spiritual vocation very young. They don't even have a choice. You know, you're having them. My mother says she didn't even realize what we were going through until she had to attend a concert my brother was in. And we're in a Republican state, you know, very conservative. And she couldn't stand for the flag. That's when she first understood what her children were being subject to every day, with the flags in school being pulled out of classrooms, you know, and sent to the library for Christmas parties and all the things that many of us went through. And that's when I started saying, this is a spiritual vocation. This is not a religion. You know, they should have, when you were talking about the vow of poverty and all that stuff, that's what they've done. They've basically tried to clone a religion, mm-hmm. they should have established themselves as a spiritual vocation. The other thing is that for me, where I am, I think on my walk is, and I think we need to make children feel comfortable to feel this way, is where I am is I'm realizing that most of us, what we know about God is really based on what someone else told us. Really, that's what it is. They've passed down from generation to generation to generation this teaching. Any religion you go into, if you look at the Muslims, you look at the Jews, you know, you look at the Christians, most of this stuff has been what we've been taught from someone else, and it's come down for centuries. And we've never really stopped to think, is it true? You know, I had to deal with, you have to understand, I left the witnesses when I was 16. It wasn't until my 40s that I really started questioning the Bible. I remember that shocked me that I had, because I remember the first time somebody told me they thought the Bible was, you know, a book of stories. And I'm like, oh, that's sacrilege. And then in my 40s, I started saying, is the Bible really inspired of God, or is the Bible really the writings of people trying to understand an unknowable God? You know what I mean? Is that what it, is that what they're trying to figure out? The whole thing when you're talking about the splitting up the languages. Was that somebody trying to understand that phenomena? Why is it that we've come into this world and we don't all speak the same language? And that's where I think I'm at. And when I was a witness, I wouldn't have felt comfortable to say that, or I wouldn't have felt comfortable to think that. I would have felt like I was being bad, or that I was, you know, not acknowledging that this is the inspired word of God. And the reason why I'm questioning it now is because you remember that thing where they have a long line of people and one person says, tell somebody the phrase. And then by the time you get to
the last telephone, it's completely different.
There is no way you're going to tell me that a book that has come down through centuries has not been modified by man, either through unintentionally or intentionally, because mankind is always messing up with some stuff. So somebody could say, well, I don't believe that word should be there, so I'm going to change it to this, this, and this. I mean, we just don't know. And so that's where I think I am. There is no way that anyone will ever convince me that there is no creator. I mean, that I personally cannot be an atheist. I know that there is a God. People may call him different things. I understand I call him God because of the faith tradition that I grew up in. I understand that I identify him as male because of the faith tradition. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I apologize for that. I told him the locker in the bedroom. Because of the faith tradition that I grew up in, I'm comfortable with that. I'm comfortable identifying him as God. I'm comfortable as identifying him as male because that's how I grew up and I'm okay with that. But the reality of it is that there are a lot of things that I don't know. I've had to figure out, you know, what is my belief system on Jesus? Now that, to say that you don't know if Jesus is real, that's some scary stuff. You know what I mean? Because we've been taught Jesus is the way, the truth, and the light. And for you to have to say, I don't know. But I've had to start doing those things. And then you realize there is a case for Jesus in terms of at least his birth and his death. There's a lot of things in the middle that, you know, religious people don't know about his life, but he did exist. But we have to start feeling comfortable
having those conversations.
Yeah.
With ourselves and with others, right. and believe that if we're having these thoughts and these feelings, that this creator is aware of this. He is aware of this process that we go through, and making our children feel comfortable. And a lot of times the children are not the problem. It's the parents.
Yep.
The children want to ask the questions, but the parents are like, oh, no, this is the safe path.
You know what that is, Lucille? That's the situation where I remember JT and I having this discussion. about the king has no clothes on, where yeah. everybody wants to see that if the king has no clothes on, but the kid is sitting there saying, look, look, mommy, look. But everybody's sitting there acting like, oh, the king does have clothes on, right? But the thing is, the kids are going to ask the question, right? And the issue that we're facing with the kids in the Jehovah's Witnesses is they used to have this book called Children. And that was during a time when they, I don't know if you guys remember this or not, but they were definitely trying to keep us from having children. I don't know. Yes. Do you guys remember that?
I don't have any kids.
Yeah. That's why we don't have kids today, because we bought into that. We're going to do more for Jehovah because we without the kids and stuff, right? I guess they're glad that they did have children, because now that those kids are the ones that's carrying on the...
Well, a lot of people didn't, and that's why they can't find younger people to step in, because so many people placated to that in the 80s and 90s.
Exactly. You're right. You're right. And so they got the 21-year-old elders now, right?
Yeah, but, and I know people who didn't have kids, but they wanted to have kids.
Yeah.
That's and true. Now that they're, you know, older, and especially when they have woken up, right?
Exactly.
They actually are realizing that they forfeited a part of them that they really, really wanted and had the right to have for something that's not even true.
I feel that way. I personally feel that way.
Really?
I cut myself short in that respect.
What did you? I'm sorry. I got a phone call. My apologies.
I forfeited having children.
Yeah, I'm happy that I didn't have any with my ex-husband, because I would have been tethered to him forever. So I'm happy about that. But I wanted motherhood.
Yeah.
I wanted it. And we didn't make it a priority because that was the culture and the environment that we were in.
That's exactly right.
I wanted to talk about, though.
But we're gonna have to table it, though, y'all. Because it's already I got to go see my father.
Right.
But I don't want to. This has been great. I mean, you know, sometimes you go on a chat, and it's like you're just struggling to keep it interesting and keep talking. But this has been awesome. I mean, just I really am leaning towards group therapy now.
Yeah,
I love really it. I think it's so important.
You know, I just feel like you need to hear someone else express it, so you know it's okay to feel that way.
Yes, yes.
It's not just this person.
It's not just
here.
Me.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Human beings just want to be, we want to be heard. We want to be acknowledged. And there is power and strength in connecting this way and hearing and storytelling.
Yeah.
That's essentially what it is. And there's a lot of power in storytelling. Just real quickly, though. So what's the prediction y'all think for the next change? Let's see what we think. I know what I think it's going to be.
Somebody said something about they're going to let people start celebrating birthdays.
I think that's it.
Yeah, birthdays.
The next time we do this, I would really like us to discuss why they're making the changes. Because
okay, I was ready to go into that.
Yeah, I want us to talk about that because they're behind the game. I mean, I have some thoughts about that. You know, but that's the theme. The theme next time we talk, I really would like to discuss that.
I would too.
Yo, and look, one time, can we talk about their nonprofit status and their lack of community resources and services? Like, I want to get into the money and the time.
Yes.
I've already researched how much it costs per hour to volunteer. And you times that number by...
Hour.
Yes.
Listen here. Yeah, you get your volunteer hour is worth money. So, for example, if you volunteer for March of Dimes or whatever, technically you've donated $31 and some change
and you can use
every
that as a
hour.
Right on.
But it's
exactly.
funny. And I know, you have to go, Lady C, but I do want to say this when we talk about the money. So I'm originally from New York. And I remember, you know, a lot of times, you know, I could see the light, you know, the watchtower, you know, logo all lit up, but I never really paid attention to it because we moved to the Midwest. I went back to New York to visit my grandmother, and normally we would take the subway back, but this time we took a car. At this point, I'm 18, because up until then, I've been saying, you know, we don't have any money. We don't keep money. They have a little contribution box in the back because I married a man who was a Baptist, you know, where they passing that collection plate back and forth. And so I'm like, you know, the witnesses were so different. Well, when we drove back and I saw how big that building was, that was the first time I said, I was 18. Where did this money come from? Because we don't have it. I was 8, because like I said, I had ignored it. I had grew up in New York from birth to 8. Then I was moved to the Midwest. And so I never, and like I said, when I would go back and visit, I never was in a car. I was always taking the subway. So I never got to see this. But at 18, I remember driving by there and literally saying, where is this money coming from? If the brothers are standing up in the hall and they're giving an accounting for every dime, this is how much we collected, this is how much we paid out, this is our balance, where did that come from? And that was the first time I
can't. By the time they get done pimping every congregation, and you know, because you know when JT did that video about the deficit and how every week, you know, you even had the assembly hall paid for.
I love that.
How can you give me a bill at the end of my convention or end of my assembly weekend if this building is paid for? We should just be paying $30 a month for the lights, because if you got 10 congregations sharing it, 10 times 30, that should cover. That should, I mean, I'm just giving, you know, some numbers.
That's so important. I mean,
yeah,
why is there always a deficit? Or do we have to take out a loan with them if we're raising all this money to build this building? We still got to take out
a
loan.
And we're working for free. We got free labor, free resources,
lumber. They were working it. And when you think about the average church, you may have somebody that has a church in town, maybe you got 2 or 3 congregations or something, or churches or whatever. But can you imagine having this all over the globe? And not only that, but I interviewed a young lady from Africa, and I'm still working on her video. She talked about that, about how can you come over here to Africa and take money from us and tell us that we have to give you our donation, regardless if you buy your loaf of bread, because she said that's what they were up against. She said, we either give our contribution to the society or we buy a loaf of bread for our family to eat.
Lord have mercy.
So we have the next discussions. We have the one about the money, because they sold a building out here in Indianapolis to another church.
That happens all the time.
Yeah, but it was in the newspaper.
$2.7 million.
They sold Assembly Hall for $2.7 million. It was either 2.7 or 2.4. They sold it to a church. And because I remember the pastor from that church said, or the representative said, that building was in pristine condition. It had always been a place of worship. The witnesses bought it from another congregation. But if you're a plumber and a Jehovah's Witness and you got to go inside a church to do some work, they don't want you to do that. But they don't want you to go in the church to do the work, but they can buy from a church and sell to a church.
And then what do they do with that 2.5
million? Or Jared Kushner. Or they can buy, they can sell to Jared Kushner.
Yeah.
She said.
They do it all.
I want to know, what did they do with the 2.5 million? Did they redistribute that in that local community? That zip code, that county?
That money went to Bethel.
Community is a lot of money.
That money went to Bethel. The money went to Bethel. They sold all those congregations. They renegotiated the contributions. I think they were trying to get with $5,000. They couldn't keep no more than $5,000 in an account or some kind of poverty they were putting the congregations in, and all monies were being sent to Bethel. Because my cousin, who's a current witness right now, called me on the phone, and he said, this is what he said. He said, this is a Jehovah's Witness. He goes, I want to know what the hell is going on. And I'm up here laughing like, no, he didn't. He wants to know what the hell is going on. Why are you asking me that? You still going to the Kingdom Hall? Not me. I'm not there.
But yeah,
he knows we have a YouTube channel. And he said that he even has some friends from New York City that watch our channel. They're elders in the congregation. And they were, this is a couple years ago, and he called me and he said, my friends were saying, why don't y'all give some talks about how, I forgot what it was he wanted me to talk about. It had to do with the double standards and stuff in the congregation, but the elders, his elder friends wanted us to do those videos on our channel. That was crazy. Yeah, all right, ladies, it's been real.
I can't wait to have that conversation.
Miss Ivy,
you guys.
The Grammar Goddess, and Lucio, this has been real, ladies. So look, we look forward to seeing our audience in the next video. When y'all gonna do this again? Are we gonna make this another 2 weeks from now, Sunday?
Yes.
All right. Well, I've enjoyed this so much.
Me too.
And I look forward to seeing you guys on the next video.
Thank you so much, Lady
Thank
Z.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye.
This program was sponsored by Critical Thinkers.